Would you call yourself a socialist?
No.
You've never told a lie in politics?
No.
See, somebody sent me a video actually last Friday, and it had you talking at the socialist union.
Yes.
And you mentioned the word comrade about four times in a minute. What was that about?
It was a rally, and I would have been about 25 years old.
Comrade.
That was in 2009.
Oh, well, I can't remember which country it was in.
Has it changed since those days?
No, not particularly.
If you are caught in a lie or caught intentionally misleading the New Zealand public, how would you expect to be held to account?
Well, I actually believe that it is possible to exist in politics without lying.
Liz, how are you? Welcome to our program.
Oh, hi, Grant. Can you hear me?
Yes, but we're loud and clear. Was.
Oh, good.
You've got some exciting news to tell us. Well, I think it's exciting.
It's kind of like one of those kind of technical things, I suppose. But I think it shows us the way the wind's blowing and listening to the guys talk about this. I guess it's the one ring to rule them all, and in the darkness bind them. You know, those you fans of the writings of J.R. Tolkien will know what I'm talking about. But we know how that ended, and it's the same thing. It's local, which will bring down the global. It's local action, it's local court cases. I'm talking about a district court in this case. Now, you guys might know that the General Secretary of our union, Erica Whittam, had a case that's been, you know, talked about quite a lot on Section 83 or the union Zooms. And her case is against, started out with the local Taupo Tennis Club, who kept her from using their toilets. She's a member. And we started talking back, probably about 6 months ago, or maybe more, about the fact that under the Health and Safety at Work Act, there's this thing called a PCBU. This whole schmozzle that's been, the whole scam that's been run legally and politically has been under that act. The problem is, it seems that nobody's taken cases under it because the lawyers don't know anything about it. Union lawyers tend to know about it, but the others don't. Okay, so she started off with her local tennis club. We talked about how could there be joinder of other parties. The next one up the list was... is because the case is still ongoing, is Tennis New Zealand, and they were taking their orders from Sport New Zealand. So we developed an action, took it to the district court. Originally it was going to be a criminal action, because there's two ways you can take action under the Health and Safety Act, either in the criminal or there's three ways, actually, three courts.
Yep.
There's the employment courts or the employment institutions as a PG. Yep. There's the civil courts as a civil claim, or there's the criminal jurisdiction. Now, of course, the criminal and the civil are both going through starting with the district court and then moving up. Okay, so we've got district, high, appeal, and Supreme Court. So we've got four levels that, you know, you can keep these things alive in. But the first thing the three oppositions wanted to do was strike out the cause of action. So that's what she was down in Taupo for yesterday. Now, I couldn't go down, unfortunately. I had something else that was important to do. But another of the advocates from the union went down with her to help, because, of course, standing is always a problem in these situations. So it's always the individual who has to take the action state or the corporation. You can't our rights under the Bill of Rights Act, the 1688 Bill of Rights Act, international instruments, international treaties are all individuals, all individual rights. The people who are bound to listen to us and have the weight of the law against them are actually the Crown and parts of the Crown, agents of the Crown. That net of agents of the Crown is widening as we speak. Actually, there's more recognition of the part that companies, corporations, NGOs, etc., play in this. Now, going back to sort of the weapon we're using is the Health and Safety at Work Act. And it captures all of these monsters under this concept of PCBU. Now, that stands for Person in Charge of the Business or Undertaking. Now, you would think a tennis club, right? Where's that? Where does that fit in as a tennis club? What sort of business or undertaking is that? Well, you pretty much can't get out of it. As long as you're conducting some sort of enterprise and you have at least one person you're paying money to, you are captured as the PCBU. So long story short, she went down there yesterday. The PCBU status was able to be confirmed because they paid someone to clean their toilets. Surprise, surprise. They actually had an accountant as well. But anyway, often accountants will do these things for nothing. Taupo Tennis Club, unfortunately, paid their accountant, and they also paid somebody to clean the toilets. It's quite ironic, isn't it, how these things hinge on the most basic of stuff that we want to have done by somebody else for us. Right. So anyway, that hurdle's overcome, and the decision's reserved, by the way. But what was interesting was there were the two other big things in it are what's called coercion, because coercion is what is unlawful under the Health and Safety at Work Act. Now, coercion can also spread its net very wide to catch all these little fishies and all these big fishies. And it's because of the nature of it. So it can be, you know, what we're quite familiar with, where people say you're going to lose your job if you don't take the jab, down to if you we'll just put you on shorter hours. Now, that's one case that's been found to be unlawful. Although I don't know if it was in the context of coercion, I think it was more in the context of the Employment Relations Act and what you'd call a detriment, you know, a detriment that wouldn't be put on to somebody else. So there's quite a different lot of ways that you can look at it. But anyway, so there's that. Or there's, you're going to go into the draw to win $1,000. If you get two jabs, or we'll give you some groceries, or we'll pay you $50, young man, if you don't go home and tell your mum and dad that we want you to get vaxxed. All these things are coercion. The law looks, under the Health and Safety at Work Act, the law looks extremely closely at that and finds people and in the criminal jurisdiction, but you can claim damages in the civil jurisdiction. We haven't got the case through yet, but it's only a matter of time. I'm talking about in all of the situations where we're representing workers in the union, and sometimes contractors. We're helping. We've got one case with a contractor who's going through the Human Rights Commission at the moment. We've just upped to mediation at this stage. We haven't actually pulled it into the tribunal yet. So all of these people, you could say that businesses who've been hurt by all of that has been going on, because it's been on the basis of lying as well, that they have been coerced into things. Misrepresentation is going to be a big one soon. So we're using the Health and Safety at Work Act very extensively. Now, in terms of Bill of Rights Act, which is also another individual right of action against the group or against the corporation or against the state or against the globalists, is another act that we can bring to our defence. Now, unfortunately for the other side down in Taupo yesterday, their lawyers thought they were smart and said to the judge, "You haven't got jurisdiction." Well, we didn't know about the case, but the judge then asked the clerk of the court, because at first he asked the lawyer for the other side, "Well, what case are you relying on for that, sir?" Or young whippersnapper. And they didn't have an answer, of course, but the clerk of the court had an answer, and it's a case called Wilson. It's a criminal case, Wilson, Katie Marie or something like that, versus the Attorney General. Now, I read the case, short case. I read it this morning. There is no suggestion, 2009, there's no suggestion in that case that the district courts don't have jurisdiction to hear the Bill of Rights cases, because, of course, they are part of the judiciary, which brings them, they are bound under Section 3 of the Bill of Rights, and also they are bound to hear anything that touches on our fundamental freedoms. They are bound to hear it with favour under Section 6 of that Act. We don't have to take judicial reviews, although I am going to take a judicial review of the whole Act, and in particular of the vaccination order, but that's by the by at the moment. So we're talking about the fact that it's a wake up. The cases, the district courts are now realizing the power that they have, because a lot of this stuff has been at that high level of, what do they call it, constitutional lawyers and constitutional law. And nobody gets a look in unless, you've joined the big group and why they want the big group of people. It's not because that makes any difference, because it's the individual that always gets to assert the right, but because it's money, right? So if you've got what's called a group action, but these judicial reviews that have been going on, they are not true group actions, because they're just actions to raise money to support the lawyers, basically. A lot of this stuff can be done without, if the lawyers would give their time freely, a certain amount has to be paid to take care of their time, but a lot of this hoo-ha about raising tons of money for lawyers is a scam. Okay, so what I'm saying is, you know, you're talking about the global, you're talking about this zeitgeist, if you like, of in everything you've been saying, you know, whether you're trying to get justice in the medical system or the court system or the workplace. You've always got to remember that the individual has all of the rights and the group has none, basically, because we're all equal under the law and we all have our individual relationship with the big man, the creator. And we were all meant, to be on this path and to be fighting the good fight. But it's an individual good fight against the forces of evil, which in the end are individuals as well. But, you know, we know who which side they're on, and we know which side we're on, or we should be. We should know which side we're on, and we should take heart from that, because of course we win, no doubt about it. So that's kind of, I'd like to, you know, just like to leave you with, take heart, have joy in the work, and look to the day that we win, and we are winning. We don't know what the result of the case in Taupo will be, but we will support. We will support Erica to go on if it has to be appealed, okay, because we've got another three courts to go. But, yeah, that's the story so far in that part of the battle. So thanks.
Well, this is absolutely huge. Liz?
Thanks.
It's absolutely huge, isn't it? Because, hang on, I've got a bit of feedback. Can you mute yourself, Max? Yeah, it's huge, because if this case, if the judge rules in favour of the plaintiff, is that right? The one that's Erica? This will affect everything if it's coercion. I mean, this will affect me and my yacht club that wouldn't let me go into the bar and wouldn't let me enjoy the festivities because of the COVID, wasn't vaccinated. And it would also, what about the government and the pharmacies paying, you know, or whoever it was that was behind all this? Probably government paying it money to young people to get vaccinated. And I got sent a $50 voucher to get my vaccine. And my $50 voucher was at Pack and Save. And all this money being spent, that's coercion.
Who sent you that?
It came as a text. You get your vaccination, and I've got it there somewhere, and you'll receive a $50 voucher at Pack and Save.
Wow.
I don't think it's a hoax, but I heard a lot of that.
Here's the thing, because they had to get you to do it what they call voluntarily.
Yes.
Because, you know, unless they could coerce you in your workplace or coerce you because of, you know, the social life that you wanted to lead, et cetera. But remember, and this is something that I did send information about it to Sue, but it didn't get brought up, is section 92I for Indigo, subsection 5 of the Health Act 1956. Now, why this is important is because in no case may somebody be required to take medical treatment. Now, this 1956 Act, I mean, I don't want to get too far into all of the acts and bore everybody, but in actual fact, the 2020 Act is incorporated into the 1956 Act. So everything, including all of the principles of voluntary compliance, et cetera, is covered by that act because there's been a, under section 34 of the COVID-19 Public Health Response Act 2020, under section 34 of that, to save themselves from liability, they've incorporated themselves into the 1956 Act and kept it pretty darn quiet as far as they could, but they had to do it because really that was their only way to make out to people that nothing could be done, because in section 34, if you don't read it closely or you didn't actually know what the 1956 Act was about, or you didn't know that when it says something like, I haven't got it in front of me, but it's just it's a half a sentence, as usually these things are, which talks about the 20, I'll just see if I can find it, hang on a minute, let's have a look, I'll read it for you. Section 34, and this is kind of like covering, it's called covering your ass section, and it is, what's it say, 34, protection, where are we, 34C, oh, I've got the wrong one. Public health. No, this is it.
Now, in case you're wondering, Liz is a lawyer.
Protection of persons, right? Protection of persons acting under authority of this act. So they're talking about that, the act that, you know, everything's been run under. Section 129 of the Health Act 1956, which relates to the protection of persons acting under authority of that act, okay, applies as if that act included a reference to this act. That act included a reference to this act means, in lawyer speak, the two acts are bound together in terms of the liability, right? Now, Section 129 of the Health Act 1956, if you just read it, the whole thing is, you know, persons who in pursuance or intended pursuance of any provisions of this act does any act or fails or refuses to do any act shall not be under any civil or criminal liability in respect thereof, whether on the ground of want of jurisdiction or mistake of law or fact or on any other ground. Yeah, but wait till you hear this. Unless he has acted or failed or refused to act in bad faith or without reasonable cause. Now, you know, I was just talking about that case I was reading this morning about Wilson and the Attorney General. It's got a slightly longer name, Wilson, Katie Marie or something, and the Attorney General. The case was about the police doing stopping people to check their registrations, etc. She'd had a little bit of a run-in with the cops before over drunk driving and, well, drinking, excess alcohol and some other stuff. But they in their computer thing, in the end it turned out that their computer had someone else actually from up north was using the same name as an alias. And she was the one that was this other Katie Wilson was the one that there was an outstanding warrant out for her arrest, because she'd I think one thing was assault and the other thing was, I think it was another driving charge. And anyway, long story short, this other poor woman got dragged off on her birthday, which happened to be the same birthday as me, by the way. Got dragged off, she's not my age though, dragged off to Henderson cop shop. They, you know, she kept saying she had a passport on her, But she didn't have a driver's license. It, apparently it sounded like it was sitting in the glove box and was a bit messy, and the cops reckon they couldn't check it. You know, it didn't look like her or something, or it was blurry. They got in touch with internal affairs. Yes, the passport belonged to her. She had a tow rag of a father who just turned up late in the piece that the cops got in touch with, who said to them, "Oh, she's probably lying to you. I'd keep hold of her. It sounds like a total loser." The mother, who, you know, she, apparently this girl had hardly knew the father. He just sort of turned up recently. The mother said, "No, no, she lives in Auckland. She does. She's never lived up in Whangarei, and she stayed there a couple of times, but she doesn't live there. She lives in such and such a place." And anyway, long and short of it was that the cops, if you like, acted in bad faith or without reasonable care. So all of their protections, because there's another act that protects cops as well. And they were talking about that. They weren't talking about this this protection, which is in the Health Act. But but what the judge said is, you know, from the moment they knew or should have known that they'd got the wrong person that they arrested, they should have let her go, because she got out. They kept her overnight in the cells. She did something like burnt some toilet paper to get their attention. She said, "I mean, she's a bit ditzy, but never
as you do."
As you do. And I've never been in the cells overnight, but, you know, I tend to find the best thing to do is just have a sleep. Anyway, she got kept in the cells overnight, stripped, searched, and they put her in a Braveheart, they called it, a Braveheart outfit, a tartan poncho, apparently. Some of the listeners might even be aware of it, and they call this the Braveheart outfit, but it's supposed to stop you committing suicide by, you know, grabbing your belt or whatever. Anyway, on her birthday, she spent it in the cells, but the judge the next day, you know, sort of said, "Well, what are you doing? You know, let her go immediately," when she got to the district court the next day. And the cops looked like a pack of idiots. But and she also got some what are called public law damages for it. Under the Bill of Rights Act, you can, you know, the it's up to the judge, but they can award some money. So she got she went after 20, but she got 8,000 off the cops. That was 2009. But, you know, there's always in these cases lots of great points. But what I'm saying is everybody's got to know this stuff, that, you know, it's the state, it's the corporations, et cetera, that are breaking the law, and we can break them because they break the law. Because in the end, they all get into their pants one leg at a time, right? Nobody can beat the truth in the end. And so I just want to say to you guys, one other thing about telling the truth, right? You know how we keep hearing safe and effective? Well, and this came to my attention over the... in the course of the baby case, was the provisional consent that people could always talk about under the Medicines Act. And I'll get you that one, the Medicines Act 1981. Under the Medicines Act, all new medicines, which included Moderna, whatever, you know, because they all developed them within a year and they hadn't been on the market before, right? So all new medicines under the Medicines Act come in under Section 20. On Section 20, which is headed Restrictions on the Sale or Supply of new medicines is really interesting in because really what's happening with what they call the rollout is basically it's you can't sell or supply stuff until you got the distribution rights.
People should not be walking around with masks. Let me just state for the record that masks are not theater. Wearing a mask might make people feel a little bit better.
And masks are protective.
But it's not providing the perfect protection that people think that it is.
There has not been any indication that putting a mask on and wearing a mask for a considerable period of time has any deleterious effects.
There are unintended consequences. People keep fiddling with the mask and they keep touching their face.
And can you get some schmutz sort of staying inside there?
Of course.
You do not need to wear a mask indoors if, in fact, you've been vaccinated. Good that you're vaccinated, but in a situation where you have people indoors, particularly crowded, you should wear a mask.
So even if you are vaccinated, you should wear a mask.
That if, in fact, you are vaccinated, fully vaccinated, you are protected, and you do not need to wear a mask outdoors or indoors.
When the children go out into the community, you want them to continue to wear masks.
You know, if you look at children outside, particularly when they're with the family, walking down the street, playing a game or what have you, don't have to wear a mask.
The Academy of Pediatric actually makes that recommendation that children should be wearing masks from 2 years old onward.
And you're asking now, if your child is a member of your household, can you walk outdoors with your child without a mask? According to that chart, the answer is yes.
But the child can't, not to beat it to death. Yeah.
Yes, yes. Okay.
Because now the CDC says, I mean, I think I've got this right. One mask is better than zero masks. Two masks is better than one mask. But you don't have to have double masks. Is that right? I mean,
you know, it became clear that cloth coverings that you didn't have to buy in a store, that you could make yourself, were adequate.
And then you want it to fit better. So one of the ways you could do it, if you would like to, is put a cloth mask over, which actually here and here and here, where you could get leakage in, is much better contained.
And are you a double masker, Dr. Fauci? Look like you are.